It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation and welcome to the show. I am Kim Munson. Thank you to each and every one of you for listening. I appreciate you. Today, strive for excellence, live with intention, and take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And thank you to producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, these great people at Crawford Broadcasting that brings our independent voice to the airs. Producer Steve, happy Monday.
You keep saying that. I'm not buying it. I'm sorry.
It's a great day to be alive, and we've got a lot of work to do. In studio with me is my good friend, Susan Kochevar. You know her. She is an entrepreneur. She is the owner of the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. Susan, it's great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
And a big show planned today. We're going to be biting off a subject that you wanted to talk about in the second segment regarding these public-private partnerships. That's going to be pretty fascinating. And then segments 3 and 4, Dr. Brian Dimitrovic will be joining us. And you know him. He is an economic historian. He is the author of several books, among them JFK and the Reagan Revolution, A Secret History of American Prosperity. And I want to ask him about some China stuff going on and this all this spending, Susan.
And the oligarchy.
And oligarchy, yes. So we'll be chatting about all of that today. Check out my website. It is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. The recaps and podcasts of the shows are there. You can sign up for my weekly email newsletter. You'll get first look at all of the upcoming guests, as well as our most recent podcasts. And you can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. And thank you to each and every one of you that are contributing to support the show as well. We are an independent voice. We do self-fund. We've got these great partners that we work with, like 88 Drive-In Theater and Susan Kochevar. And so thank you to each and every one of you for supporting us that way as well. Normally, producer Steve, we don't start talking about America's veteran stories until a little later on in the week, but and we always have great shows, but this is exceptional coming up this week because it is the 79th anniversary of the Doolittle Raid in World War II, and we interviewed Jimmy Doolittle's granddaughter, Jonna Doolittle Hoppus.
Yeah, and she's made it her, I don't want to say her life story, but let's just say this way. She's invested a huge amount of effort into knowing every little facet of what happened on that day, the preparation for it, the execution, and what happened, you know, afterwards. So, yeah, this is going to be a good one.
It really is. So that is on Sundays, 3 to 4 p.m., and that will be this upcoming Sunday. Another great partner of mine is Hooters Restaurants, and they have 5 locations. Let's see, Aurora, Westminster, Lone Tree, Colorado Springs, and Loveland. And they have all kinds of specials. Kids eat free a lot. And that's always kind of nice as parents to be able to go someplace. Kids eat free. Just meet some friends and watch some sports. It's a good thing, isn't it, Susan?
Fantastic. Yeah, because little kids nibble.
They do nibble. And so be sure and check out my website. You go to my sponsors tab. And all those sponsors there, I highly recommend them. And just click on Hooters and it'll come up with all their specials there. Let's jump into our quote for today. Because Susan was in studio and we'll be talking with Dr. Brian Dimitrovic, I thought Milton Friedman would be a great guy to quote. He was born in 1912. He died in 2006. And he was an influential economist who advocated for a free market economy and whose work is reflected in his major books such as Capitalism and Freedom. Most of his impactful works in the course of his career transpired at the University of Chicago, and he was very influential, Steve, you'll like this, to Thomas Sowell. And he is regarded as an economist, an intellectual, and free market thinker. And so bear with me, but this is a good one, Susan. I know you're going to like this. When a man spends his own money to buy something for himself, he is very careful about how much he spends and how he spends it. When a man spends his own money to buy something for someone else, He is still very careful about how much he spends, but somewhat less what he spends it on. When a man spends someone else's money to buy something for himself, he is very careful about what he buys, but doesn't care at all how much he spends. And when a man spends someone else's money on someone else, he doesn't care how much he spends or what he spends it on, and that's government for you.
One of my favorite quotes.
Yes, and we see a lot of that going on right now. Speaking of that, let's go to Bill of the Day. And the sponsors are Senators Rodriguez and Hansen, and Representatives Benavides and Gonzalez Gutierrez, and all Democrat. And this is Senate Bill 21-233. No fiscal note to date yet. And it says it's Colorado Department of Labor and Employment Unemployment Insurance Division Enterprise. And whenever I see the word enterprise, danger, danger. Don't you agree?
I so agree.
Okay. This is the bill summary. The bill establishes the Left Behind Workers Program in the Division of Unemployment Insurance in the Department of Labor and Employment. First of all that's bureaucrats. You're not seeing anything elected there. For the purpose of providing unemployment assistance relief payments to eligible individuals who are unemployed through no fault of their own. Well, everybody's unemployed right now because of the government. But anyway, that wasn't in there. That was just my. Who meet specified criteria. That's another force word. Mm-hmm. And who are ineligible for regular unemployment benefits due to their immigration status. The bill requires the department to contract with a third-party administrator to administer the program. The third-party administrator must provide outreach to unemployed individuals who may be eligible to receive unemployment assistance relief payments, screen applicants for eligibility, so they'll pick winners and losers on that, and make payments to eligible individuals. It establishes the Left Behind Workers Fund as part of the enterprise that is administered. Where's the money going to come from?
Oh, I can tell you where it's going to come from. Employers.
Where? Okay. Well, we talked about it last week, Steve, and we talked about it with Hal. Hal Van Herke, that the unemployment fund currently is close to $1 billion in the hole, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. That was the amount quoted in that story, yes.
So we're already $1 billion in the hole for Americans, and now we want to establish a fund. There is no money. But anyway, I'll continue. It says the fund consists of a percentage of the premium currently assessed by the division and paid by employers. The bill includes the Employment Support Fund as part of the enterprise that is administered by the division. You're a small business owner. Tell me what you think about that.
So for people that don't understand how this works, every year I get what they call it a premium, an amount that I'm supposed to pay in based on payroll to unemployment. And if there's a shortage, they increase that amount so employers make it up. When COVID...
Now, do the employees pay anything for this, or is this all on the employer?
The employer pays unemployment insurance. Employees always think, I'm going to draw it because I earned it. Nope. The employer pays it. And I could pay my employees more if I did not have to pay the unemployment insurance. They could have that. They maybe buy their own private unemployment insurance if that was important to them.
Or they might save.
Or they might save.
Okay.
But what happened is when COVID hit and they started paying unemployment benefits to all these people who were government forced out of their jobs because they shut everything, immediately Colorado came out and said to employers, you're going to have to backfill this amount. And of course, the fund is, like you said, broke into the billions now. So what's going to happen is they're going to soak small businesses again.
Well, the small businesses are getting soaked across the board with this family leave.
Yes.
This paid family leave. That's another cost. And what? I can't remember what that is exactly. I can't remember what that is, but that's another cost. Mm-hmm. And once again, that is money that you could be paying to an employer or employee.
Yes.
And then when we're looking at the Harris-Biden administration, and they're going to want to probably increase premiums on Medicare, Social Security. What point? I mean, this seems like this is pushing small businesses to the brink.
That's, I think, what they're trying to do is bust small businesses so the big corporations can take over and we're going to have an oligarchy. People don't like to hear that, but I can see that's what's happening. What, you know, the other really bad problem with the Family Leave Act is I can't have two or three people off on family leave and to hire more people and sustain all those people. I can't raise my prices high enough to cover all that. My customers won't come. This is absolutely unsustainable.
So we have to say, what is the end game on this whole thing? And Steve, you and I were talking about it on our pre-call as I was coming in. And we've talked about the World Economic Forum and that basically that they want to get rid of property rights, individual private property. And this is a way to do this, to use public policy to pick winners and losers, to tax and fee businesses and people out of their businesses and out of their homes. I never dreamed, Steve, that we would be in this situation in America.
Well, the reason you went in this particular direction in terms of looking at the World Economic Forum, my question to you is, like, we've been doing Bill of the Month, Bill of the Day, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For what, 3 weeks, 4 weeks now?
Mm-hmm.
And not a one of them has been a winner in any way, shape, or form. So my question to you, and I know the two of you could really take this apart well, where is this coming from in terms of are the constituents of these Democrats running to them and saying, we need this, this, and this? Or is it something else? And you nailed it, I think, when you went to this World Economic Forum.
Well, it's been in process, excuse me, to get to this point, to understand this, because everyday people will look at this and they'll say, they can't believe that we would have politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties that would really put in policies that would hurt everyday Americans. It's hard to believe. But I think, Susan, the veil is off on this agenda. And this agenda, these people really don't like Americans.
No, and they're all over YouTube and they're out with it. The head of that World Economic Forum says that only some of us, well, most of us, will survive the coming food shortages. And then we'll be eating some kind of protein pack made out of insects. These people are serious. And we it just sounds so far-fetched. That can't possibly be happening. But I'd encourage you to look around you. Does this make sense?
Well, and Susan, Colorado is the petri dish for all of this.
It is.
Which is so interesting. Let's go to break, because I want to talk about what you wanted to bring forward was these public-private partnerships, but also this agenda of the World Economic Forum, which is really, its goal is to take down Western culture, to take down America, to get rid of private property rights. And you mentioned this thing about eating insects. I want to address that as well. So we're going to go to break. We'll be right back. Susan Kochevar, who is the owner of the Historic 88 Drive-In Theater. Oh, and are you opening soon?
We are opening soon. We're looking at the 23rd. We have to repair all the pipes from the nasty cold weather this
okay.
year.
So April 23rd.
Yes.
Ah, that's great. So let's go to break. We'll be right back with Susan Kochevar.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter, and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. My friends, you know that we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something is a good idea, you should not have to force people to do that. When it's a bad idea, that's where you see force come into play. Socialism ultimately has to come down to force. Susan Cochevar, owner of the historic 88 Drive-In Theater, you mentioned something about grasshopper burgers. And Colorado is the petri dish.
It is.
For all of this. And we have seen, it looks like there might be some questions regarding at the title board whether or not it's a single subject with, in Colorado, we need to have single subject questions on the ballot. But this PAUSE Act, which is, not Act, this PAUSE ballot initiative, basically would probably kill our livestock industry because it would use force and say that you cannot bring your animals to market until a certain time. And by that time, the beef is not as edible. People don't like it as much. And then it would increase the cost significantly. Think about it. If you have to bring you cannot bring your beef to market until 5 years after, 5 years in their life instead of 2 years, which is approximately the sweet spot.
Right.
Think about the cost.
Right.
So you mentioned Klaus Schwab, who the head of the World Economic Forum. He's talking about the coming food shortage. Well, we don't have a food shortage right now, but these policies would make that happen.
That's right. You know, I think it was 1946 was about the time we started to see grocery stores appear in the United States all over. Before that, people had victory gardens for the war, and most people grew their own vegetables and rabbits and chickens, and I would encourage people to do that because these people have some bad plans for us, and don't think they won't execute them. Look at the things that are happening around you now. You know, when Governor Polis came out with his meatless day, he's not a dumb man. I find it hard to believe that he didn't know Colorado's economy was based on beef. So I think that was a test to see what would happen.
Well, and what did happen is throughout the state, we had really was an Eat Beef Week. And we had probably 10 different organizations or different businesses that it was a big day, which came out and supported the industry. But they're playing the long game. They're floating this PAUSE ballot initiative out there. And again, this isn't just by accident. I think you were trying to ask me that question, Steve. Is this by accident? Are people coming to Colorado with these ballot initiatives or with this legislation? Is this by accident? Or are people coming to their legislators saying we need this? No, this is this big movement that from the World Economic Forum, and I kid you not, they have said they put it out there. And one of their goals is that people eat less meat. And then Governor Polis has this meatless day. It's not by accident. And my friends, it's not going away. Even if they don't get through the title board this year, we see, and the first thing they put out is what they really want to have happen. And they may move around the edges just a little bit to change it, but we are seeing their game plan right here, Susan.
Certainly are. And I'm going to caution everybody to start looking more at our voting system. And when I say that, I mean the software. You know, you can make it look like, oh, it's fair and even IDs and all this stuff, and we're all pushing that way, which I think IDs are important. But if we don't get a handle on that software, we're not going to be voting for anything because they're manipulating the votes.
Well, but you speak about IDs. In Colorado, we have voter ID. But people can actually present their utility bill.
That's right.
That's not ID.
No.
That is not ID. And I'll tell you what, if you go down to the Major League Baseball game and try to get your tickets and present for your ID, your utility bill, good luck to you. I don't think you're going to get your ticket, Steve.
I'm glad you went back to that reference because, you know, again, the whole reason for bringing that up was Major League Baseball's hypocrisy, but still the point is well made. And I'm going back to something that Susan just said. One of the biggest the most damaging things to me, the part I couldn't get my head around after last November's election, was the fact that people did not vote in their own self-interest. The bigger effort was to get that mean man who posts the mean tweets out of the White House. And they still don't understand how much their own self-interests were damaged.
They're finding out. So let's move over to a couple of other things. You mentioned the word oligarchy. How would you define that, Susan, for our listeners?
Well, an oligarchy is when there's a marriage between government and big business, and they sort of take over your company, your country. And that's exactly what we see happening. We have, just today, there was a report that came out that 100 companies, corporations, are against voter IDs. So who else is against that? It seems to be people, bureaucracies, and the government. Who are these corporations? You know, they have wield way too much power. They give tons of money to candidates. They're no longer private businesses. They're part of this government cabal now. And it's a very dangerous thing. One of the things that I really worry about is our candidates. We're busy looking for good candidates, and hopefully we can get our voting system straightened out to get them in. But once they get in, do they understand the principles and the things that they're supposed to fight for? Because that bureaucracy tries to roll them over.
They do. And because I served on city council for 4 years, and immediately what you've seen is there's all kinds of organizations. They're kind of quasi-government organizations. I'm thinking of like a CML. The Colorado Municipal League, that they bring all of the town council, city council people in, the mayors, and they say that they're actually standing for Colorado cities and towns, which ideally it's people that live in those cities and towns. But so there's many times for more control. They look at taxes, but they're just one organization. There's one for county commissioners. And they wield a lot of influence, and you don't see a whole lot of organizations on the freedom side that are out there doing that, because there's not really money in freedom in government and bureaucracies.
Right.
Actually, freedom means that those organizations are smaller. And these organizations live off of tax revenue. So all the different cities and towns that pay membership to this league is how that's funded.
Nobody's representing the citizen. And what brought this forward was I was listening to a candidate speak recently. She's running Fort Collins, and she said, I support public-private partnerships. She is conservative. Public-private partnerships are not conservative. That is a marriage between government and a private company. And what happens is that private company can then use the force of government against citizens. And you see this in our roads, for example, mm-hmm. where they've taken that over. So the corporation gets a ton of tax money, and they build this road, and they supposedly run it and get all the fees. Well, I know a number of people who've recently received notices from some of these C-470 groups, and they say, oh, you know, you haven't paid your bill from 6 or 7 years ago. You have no way to prove that you didn't go through that toll booth, and a lot of the pictures aren't even clear. But they can use the force of government to take your license, so you have to pay that bill. There is no due process. And that is one of the biggest problems with public-private partnerships. They can use the force of government.
Well, another thing, because that was something that I was trying to get my brain around when I was on city council, because they call them PPPs and public-private partnerships. And it's really a way to get the politicians and bureaucrats work to get their pet projects done, but without having to go to the voters to ask for the tax revenue to do so. And so, and they can all be structured differently, but typically a private company will say, we'll come in and we'll build this. And then there might be fees. So for an example, it would be a toll road, and that they will receive the fees to get that done. And again, depending that the authority might get part of that fees as well. But what we have seen, there was one of the rail lines that they were having all kinds of trouble with, and ultimately, finally, the private company walked away. And so ultimately, I think the risk on a PPP is ultimately thrown over to the taxpayer. So these big projects get done, the private company gets paid, but you can see the government chooses who gets those contracts, and it's a way, I really think, to get around the voter.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep.
Those shouldn't exist. That helps to create the oligarchy. It says, because it's a subtle way, too, of putting out there, oh, private business can't do this by itself. Yes, it can.
But there would be risks that they private business would have to take.
Yes, so the private business would have to take the risk. And what happens now is the taxpayers take the risk, as you just pointed out, mm-hmm. and the taxpayers lose. You know, which goes back to your Milton Friedman quote, the taxpayers lose, but it's somebody else's money that they're spending. They don't really care.
So the other part of this is then let's just think about it. You've got public officials that are going to give basically a contract to a private company, which probably it'd be interesting to take a look at campaign donations or how family members of those politicians, whether or not they're getting any money.
Certainly would, especially after what we see with Hunter Biden. He was asked in the interview, did you ever give money to your father in some of these deals? No. Well, no, he didn't. He took it, and then it went funneled to his dad in other ways. So, yes. It's so very important to look at those things.
So technically, the way the question was asked, he could have said no, but in other ways, he could have expounded on that.
For sure.
Okay. Do you feel like we've hit this enough on this public-private partnership so that people understand that?
I hope so. I think so.
Okay. We'll continue the conversation on that. Jason McBride, Senior VP, Presidential Wealth Management, happy Monday to you.
Happy Monday to you guys, too. Hi, Susan.
Good morning, Jason.
You want to weigh in on any of this this that we're talking about?
Well, I certainly can't disagree, and I know every time Susan comes on, she's got things well thought out and well backed up with facts that she's read or dug up. So, no, I don't think I could add much to you guys' conversation except for opinion.
Okay. Okay, well, it's Monday, and we continue to talk about the highs in the market, and you know, the market could go higher because of all the stimulus money on the short term. And I know that people may think, I don't want to get out. I don't want to miss that opportunity. But yet you also have to take a look at your risk assessment. That is something that you help people do, Jason.
Well, yeah, it is, Kim. That's something we've always tried to help with is looking at your overall plan, how much risk do you need to take to get there? And then it's your choice if you want to take more than that or less than that. But there are solutions to the problem right now that you just mentioned, Kim, of being worried it's going to go higher, but also worried it might go lower. You don't have to just sit and, you know, cash and earn zero with all your money, because there are solutions that give you some protection on that downside while, you know, still giving you a decent exposure on the upside as well. So to learn more about that or to get a plan done or any question you might have as far as your finances or investing, I'd really encourage people to make an appointment and come and see us.
And your phone number, Jason?
Best way to do that is just give us a call, 303-694-1600. That's 303-694-1600.
Jason, thank you so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a great show, Kim.
We will, because Susan Kochevar, entrepreneur, owner of the historic 88 Drive-In Theater, is in studio, and we're going to be talking with Dr. Brian Dimitrovic. We'll be right back.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MUNSON.com. And sign up for our weekly newsletter there as well. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. In studio with me is Susan Kochevar. She is the owner of the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. And Susan, you really have your pulse on what is happening to small businesses here in Colorado. And all of this legislation where they're basically taking from one person to give to another. Steve and I were talking about it. I really feel that that is really kind of like legalized theft. But this is also one of the things that you're seeing from the World Economic Forum is getting rid of private property rights. And one of the ways to do that is to use public policy to take from one person to give to another.
Yeah, I believe the quote is, you will own nothing and be happy. Well, I'm not a pet. Yeah. I've got news.
Yeah. And people do need to realize that. Let's jump over here. We have Dr. Brian Dimitrovic on the line, and he's a frequent and great guest of the Kim Munson Show. He is the Richard S. Strong Scholar at the Laffer Center. He's an economic historian, and he has a Forbes column, Past and Present. And he writes about how history can help illuminate the economic challenges we face today and how very often historical sources do validate free market economics. He's the author of what's now the standard history of supply-side economics, Econoclasts, The Rebels Who Sparked the Supply-Side Revolution and Restored American Prosperity. He wrote that in 2009. He has a PhD from Harvard. He was the visiting scholar in conservative thought and policy at CU Boulder. And several years ago, he co-authored a book with Larry Kudlow on the history of John F. Kennedy and his tax cut. It's called JFK and the Reagan Revolution, A Secret History of American Prosperity. Dr. Brian Dimitrovic, welcome to the show.
Hi, Kim. It's really great to be here.
You, last time we talked, you said that actually your books sell more when we're in a situation like we are versus with the Harris-Biden administration versus when we were seeing the prosperity under the Trump administration. And why is that, Brian?
Yeah, that's a strange truth, Kim. I think that when people are out of power, when conservatives are out of power, they get interested, and for good reasons, in kind of a reflective mode of thinking. And how do we rethink and become reacquainted with our first principles so as to come back stronger the next time? So I think that's why they're reading books right now.
Brian, we have not really talked since we've seen the policies being rolled out of the Harris-Biden administration. And this spending, and we see this big infrastructure bill out there. And one of the key things to prosperity is a sound currency and limited government spending. I'm concerned about what's going on. These policies are not sustainable. What do you think?
Well, yeah, they're certainly not sustainable. Of course they're not. I mean, these are hack politicians. I mean, Joe Biden is one of the principal machine politicians for the last 50 years, and Kamala Harris simply has no policy experience. So you're talking about a hack and an amateur who are just spending money. Now, in my own view, the government kind of unconsciously understands that the cryptocurrency revolution is going to take over the international monetary system over the next generation. So they're is much less sense of responsibility of maintaining the value of the dollar, hence the government spending, because the dollar will no longer be the predominant world currency, and so they don't feel any responsibility towards it.
Well, it's interesting that you would say this, because a couple of things. China is coming up with a digital currency, as well as the International Monetary Fund just moved the second largest bank in the world to China. How does all that relate, Brian?
Yes. Now, I'm sure China is very worried about the cryptocurrency revolution, in that cryptos in general promise a lot of anonymity with respect to sovereign powers. So China is attempting, I am sure, to set up its own cryptocurrency so as to kind of compel its own domestic users to use a currency that they can monitor. I don't think even the Chinese are going to be able to overwhelm the international crypto movement. So this is an attempt by them to forestall a much bigger problem in the future, and it won't work.
Okay. I don't really understand these cryptocurrencies, Brian. And we've talked in the past about getting back to the gold standard, but What backs up cryptocurrency?
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about that particular question. Well, nothing backs it up outside of the popular will that there not be hegemonic sovereign currencies. About that, we can be sure. There is a strong popular will throughout the world that there be something like a gold standard. And if not that, we should not have sovereign fiat currencies. I mean, there is a universal consensus on that across the globe. And that is what backs up cryptocurrencies. It is the will to overwhelm sovereign fiat currencies. And I think that's a very strong backing indeed.
I have to say that I have a knot in my stomach about that, just not being backed up by anything. I see danger in that, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, the dollar's backed up by nothing. There's this kind of sense that there's some kind of full faith and credit backing of the U.S. dollar, but that's simply not true. There's no backing to the U.S. dollar. The United States does not risk its assets, its land holdings in the West, or anything. The dollar's not redeemable in anything. So the dollar is backed by nothing. Therefore, it has no difference from cryptocurrencies. So if you're just going to have a sovereign fiat, the popular market has something else, and the game is on.
What does this do to America?
Well, I think it's very bullish for growth in the future. I think creative destruction, especially over these past 30 years of the tech revolution, has been so productive of economic growth and great innovation. So if the world has said for decades now, hey, if you're not going to be on a gold standard, you better come up with something good. The governments have ignored that advice of the marketplace, and now the marketplace is striking back, which is bullish for growth.
I'm concerned, though, about these world leaders who do not like America. Susan and I were talking before you came on with Klaus Schwab with the World Economic Forum, and their goals that they have for 2030 is to get rid of private property rights, people don't eat as much meat, going after Western values, trying to break America. I'm concerned, what does that do to everyday Americans, Brian?
Yeah, these so-called thought leaders, global leaders in places like Davos, yeah, they are concerning. I mean, they really are going to try to regulate the world. I think the primordial desire of the world not to be regulated will win out. And again, I point to the ineffectiveness of people like Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. These are fundamentally unimpressive people. I think the creative destruction of the marketplace is so much more powerful than mediocrities like that. That's why I think the market's at 33,000. The market understands that the people in government now want to dominate, but they're too incompetent to do it against a very formidable, innovative-minded market.
But I feel that they're trying to break that American spirit, the small business that Susan and I were talking about, oligarchies again before you came on, that big business and big government like each other. And through this whole COVID-19 Wuhan China virus reaction disruption, the big guys stayed open. The little guys had all these rules, regulations, got closed. I see this assault on this American spirit, this American idea, Brian.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, of course, the pandemic saw all of that in an exaggerated sense. Nonetheless, I think it was probably its acme. I think the general interest in not having what occurred over the past year is winning out, and there's a sense of complacency on the part of the oligarchs that they are winning. And I don't think the market agrees with them. I don't think the employment market agrees with them. I don't think the degree of entrepreneurialism agrees with them. I think the ineffectiveness of these oligarchs is going to win out, and there will be greater freedom in the future.
Susan, you had a comment?
Yeah, I like a lot of what Brian's saying, and I think that, I mean, I do see that popping up, that fight back from individuals popping back. I think the one thing that we have to watch is when these people who are incompetent start to fail, that's when the guns come out and they start doing really nasty things. We've seen that, you know, every time socialism, communism rolls through countries. I guess that's my biggest fear.
Your thoughts, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, to point out the socialist countries is an interesting example, so particularly, say, the old Central Eastern European countries, you know, that overcame the Iron Curtain, these people ended up being very savvy in how to do that. And now look how jealously they guard their freedom in places like Poland and Hungary. I think that's kind of a model. The United States, the American people got to see what this is. They're seeing it now with Biden, Paris. These people are incompetent. So that's kind of a gift to the opposition. I think the Americans are prepared for the future.
You always are so optimistic, and I love that because I've been concerned. I've said I came up with this was an original that a lot of people get hurt on the road to utopia. Ultimately, we know this utopian idea fails, but I think about the people that get hurt along the way, and in the big picture, these policies are unsustainable. People, I think, want freedom and liberty ultimately. But I'm just concerned about everyday people that get hurt, Brian.
Yeah, no, that's, of course, the totally real concern. I mean, just what's happening with the budget. I mean, it's just utterly absurd. Now, that said, we know that the era of fiat currencies and budget deficits must end. We know that, so therefore it must end. And I imagine we have to take some comfort in the fact that, well, it is now going to end because they're simply overdoing it. But I think we might luck out in this circumstance, in this long-term scenario of a devalued dollar and budget deficits will end care of a market reform that is a better system, care of private enterprise, than what we have currently.
Okay, Brian, I want to go to break. When we come back, what we've seen with these policies is the people are receiving money and they're not working. And I'd had Bob Woodson on with the Woodson Center, and he had said that once you separate work from income, things can get interesting. I would like to hear, and I'm paraphrasing, I'd like to hear what you have to say about that, Brian. So we're going to go to break. In studio with me is Susan Kochevar. She is an entrepreneur and owner of the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. But before we do that, another one of my great sponsors is a family-owned business, great little entrepreneurial business here in Sedalia, Colorado, and it's Castlegate Knife and Tool. Knives have been around since the Stone Age, and for good reason. They're functional, durable, and versatile. They're an essential part of the all-American toolkit. So whether you're a hunter, angler, outdoorsman, chef, no doubt you have a favorite knife or two or many that you just can't do without. Where do you go to when you want to add to that toolkit? That is Castlegate Knives. And check out castlegate.com for more information. That's castlegate.com. We will be right back with Dr. Brian Dmitrovic.
Controlling your own destiny. There are a lot of unknowns on the horizon with the new administration. Predovich & Company is here to help. Trusted professionals for all your bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting needs. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. They've been helping her for years. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company works with clients from anywhere in the United States. Give them a call at 303-791-3000 to put Predovich & Company to work for you. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute, to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. In studio with me is entrepreneur and owner of the historic 88 Drive-In Theater and a sponsor of the show, and that is Susan Kochevar. It's always great to have you here.
Thank you.
And Dr. Brian Dmitrovic is on the line, and he is an economic historian, author of several books. Econoclast is one everybody should start to go back and get. And when we talk about conservative, Brian, I've talked about the kind of the war of words, the war of the narrative. And there has been a war on the word conservative for a long time. And I want to encourage people to understand the word conserve means to conserve these principles, these ideas of the American founding, that all men are created equal with these rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. That's something I think we can all get behind, Brian.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the conservative tradition in America is to maintain the original revolutionary tradition of the 18th century, which is the rights of the people against overbearing government.
We got a lot of that going on here. Now, human nature, Brian, many times just regular human nature likes to get stuff for free. And we're seeing all kinds of separation of receiving money, receiving income, and separating that from work, which is from work, from earning it. And that is antithetical to the American founding. In a way, I think it's legalized theft, because you have to get the money from somewhere. It's either you're taking it from your neighbors or you're taking it from our children and our grandchildren in the form of debt. In fact, we're paying people more to not work through unemployment benefits than to work. Although I was talking to somebody last night, there was no free lunch. All of a sudden, it looks like the government's coming back and they're wanting taxes and all kinds of things. But what's your thoughts on that, Brian?
Yeah, no, I think, Kim, that's an essential point. I think it's all based on the politics of envy. Envy is, you know, kind of the strongest of the negative emotions. And there's an envy among the elite class of regular people who are able to work for a living. The elite class often wants to condescend to these people, saying they need help. They're the kinds of people who need help. So they kind of have to prove that by giving them handouts. And if that's not needed, then the character of the elite has to improve. It is in fact the case that people can get along by themselves if there's a good economy. Then the elites have to start realizing that they shouldn't be condescending to these people, but that would involve an improvement in their own character. So I think it's a question of character. I think it all stems from condescension towards the working class.
I was talking to a young millennial the other day who's probably more apolitical, and he said, actually, I did really well under the Trump administration. And you look at the successes of record unemployment for blacks and Hispanics and women, and more money, about $6,000 on average, in everyday hardworking people's pockets. Is that one of the reasons that we're seeing the Harris-Biden administration with warp speed trying to undo everything that happened under the Trump administration?
Absolutely. I think that's at the center of it, Kim. Some of the statistics from 2019, which we never hear about, are truly amazing. I mean, my favorite one is median household income, the old median family income statistic, which for years the left liberal establishment said was the key metric to measure how well ordinary people are doing in the United States. It leapt by $10,000 in 1 year, 2018 to 2019, blowing away anything Bill Clinton or anyone like that ever achieved. And that statistic had been fairly flat for a long time in the 2000s. And you hear boo about that. So, yeah, there's a lot of resentment of people getting along very well under free market policies.
Wow. Susan, you had a question.
Yeah, well, that was just ripping off a little bit of the regulation. Can you imagine how fast our country would whip around if that regulation was ripped off? People are so afraid of that. They see the regulation as the fences that keep them safe, but they're the walls that keep them in. It's really sad. How, Brian, with all this stuff now, with the COVID and everything, people's savings have been drained, a lot of their retirements, especially small businesses. How does the average person hold out with this decline in the destruction of the dollar?
Yeah, Susan, you're such a great representative of, you know, the entrepreneur at the small business level. And that's really the ideal of so many people in the United States. And you're right, there is an assault on that right now. And it's going to be difficult to navigate. But my general point is that these people who came in the Democratic wins, and it was a fairly minor win if you look at the state houses and Congress in 2020, these people are old-time hacks. So what they're going to try is going to be overbearing, it's going to be blunderbuss, and it's going to be big. But it's not going to be smart, and it's not going to represent the interests of the mass of the American people. So if one keeps one's wits and one is savvy, one can navigate this thing and win in the end.
Brian, you were the visiting professor of conservative thought and policy at CU Boulder, so you're somewhat familiar with Colorado. And I am convinced that Colorado is the petri dish for all of this radical stuff that is coming from ultimately this whole World Economic Forum thing. In fact, we just talked about it earlier today. There's a possible ballot initiative. It's called PAWS, and it says to pause animal cruelty. And I don't think anybody wants to be cruel to animals, but ultimately what it is an assault on the livestock and agricultural industry here in Colorado. It basically would, by force, say that, for example, beef producers could not bring their beef to market at 2 years, which is the sweet spot, 24 months. They'd have to wait till 60 months, which is 5 years. And so we're seeing all of this seems to be, we're the petri dish here, Brian. What would you say to Coloradans here? Because I know a lot of people that are leaving Colorado.
Okay, I mean, those are important concerns. And I'm sure in the example you mentioned that regulation was designed precisely because it is economically harmful. I wouldn't give it the credit to assume that it was designed for any other reason than the overlay, the cover, was an environmental reason. But yeah, these elites resent a kind of mass economic success, kind of mass entrepreneurialism. As for Colorado and people leaving, yes, that does occur. I mean, obviously it's happening in California to a great degree, and it's happening even in Oregon. Not so much in Washington State that has a zero income tax there on the West Coast. So I think if Colorado gets its tax-cutting conscience back, and it just might, it could start to reverse some of those trends.
We're seeing, when we've been low-lighting a bill of the day on a regular basis. Today, the bill of the day is basically to, and the Colorado Unemployment Fund is $1 billion in debt right now. And this new bill would create a third-party organization that would, in essence, administer an unemployment program for illegal aliens or illegal immigrants. And we don't have the money. But again, I think this is kind of petri dish stuff. What's your comments on something like that, Brian?
Yeah, the idea that Colorado would be in debt in any way is appalling. I mean, this is one of the most successful states of the new millennium. It's just been a surge of employment and gross state product over the last 20 years. If the government is having any kind of fiscal problem, it can point its finger at itself. As for illegal aliens, the government under Biden-Harris is obviously just completely at sea as regards what to do with the immigration problem. So I can only see the so-called illegal alien problem increasing, in that solving it requires a degree of governmental competence, and you just don't see that from this administration. So I think that problem's only going to get more severe.
Well, and Brian, I think one of the things that we need to do is make sure that we have fair elections, that we can trust our elections. And we have a number of concerns about that. But we've got to get to that and then continue to talk about these ideas so that everyday people understand what's going on. Susan, you had a thought?
Especially the candidates.
Yeah, right. And we need to support candidates because once they're elected, and we need to continue to support them to encourage them to stay with founding principles. What's your thoughts on that, Brian?
Yeah, again, the squawking on the part of the left about you're not even allowed to talk about election reform at all. If you do, you're in the third rail, you're expelled from polite discourse, you're canceled. Well, there must be a lot of air there if they're making such noise about it, if they're pulling out the howitzers. So clearly, election fraud is a major constituent of the Democratic playbook, and I think that should tell us that it's fundamentally unpopular, the policies and the ideology of the Democratic Party, because they understand if there were real elections, they'd probably get trounced at the polls in general, as in many cases they were, in fact, in 2020, if you look at the electoral map across the levels of government. So I think all that squawking about election fraud just speaks a worry on the part of the Democrats that their ideology is not representative.
And human nature is the same, isn't it? I was just thinking of the Shakespearean quote, "Ye doth protest too much," correct?
Yeah, I've never seen protests like this. I mean, no, everyone's looking at American history and saying, geez, we have this tradition of freedom of speech. And if you utter something on this central political issue, which is the nature of elections, it's considered illegitimate. How can political speech by definition be considered illegitimate? So they're protesting too much.
Oh, yes. You'll love this, Brian. They've just passed something in Colorado. They're going to study setting up a ministry of truth here.
Yeah, well, I guess the Soviet Union, et cetera, might give them some, they should reach the George Orwell in a bad mood, and maybe they'll get some ideas. I guess CU anticipated this in setting up the visiting scholar position. That's an act of desperation. If you have to come up with truth squads, then you know your argument's losing with the public.
Well, you'll like this. The new visiting scholar has been banned from campus. I don't know if you heard that.
No, yeah, I'm on the board. I'm very familiar with this. We have a board meeting tomorrow on this, CU. I'm concerned about that. I mean, John Eastman has a lot of very important pieces of evidence, affidavits, et cetera, that were presented before state legislatures in places like Pennsylvania and Michigan that are really fascinating when you look at them, when you listen to those testimonies that were put before those legislatures of gaylords full of ballots being shipped across state lines. So, he's very interesting.
Well, and I have a podcast with Dr. Eastman that you should check out on my website. Dr. Brian Dimitrovic, thank you so much for joining us today. It's always a great conversation.
Thank you, Kim, and thank you, Susan.
And Susan, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And our quote for today is Milton Friedman. He says, "The essential notion of a capitalist society is voluntary cooperation, voluntary exchange. The essential notion of a socialist society is force." My friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.